What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 235 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is Sunday evening in our normal, traditional time slot, and joining me, as he often does, Scott Coleman is here. Hello, sir.
Hey, Brad. Good to be on. An enjoyable Sunday afternoon for Braves baseball, and lots to talk about, so it should be a good one.
For sure. And by the way, if you missed it, I believe it was on Wednesday, Eric Cole, our favorite other co-host, took the reins and interviewed Grant McCauley, 680 The Fan. That was a fun conversation, so if you missed that one, check it out. And you also had me coming on to deliver the quick post-mortem after the Soroka injury before that. So if you missed anything from earlier in the week, check it out. But plenty of news and stuff to get to, as well as a very, very fun Sunday that you alluded to there for the Braves with a nice little sweep over the Phillies. News-wise, we'll just breathe through some stuff here. Will Smith is back slash debuting. He made his debut actually over the weekend. That was good to see. He was activated officially on Thursday with Alex Jackson going back to the minors. And by the way, we have to bid farewell, at least for now, to Scott Schebler. Quite a run. Quite a run for Scott Schebler, who was acquired and then DFA'd without really doing anything whatsoever. So
yeah,
there you go.
I had no idea he was even on the active roster. I knew they had added him, but I didn't realize he was on the roster. I thought he was on the whatever we're calling it, the Gwinnett shuttle team. So, RIP Scott Schebler. Maybe later in the year if something goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, there you go. Other than that, Chris Martin is on the IL now with, and I quote, an esophageal constriction. That does not sound fun in any way, shape, or form for Chris Martin. Hopefully he'll be okay in the near future. The Braves recalled Sobotka, who was then optioned again, and then he was actually still on the roster today as the 29th man. So Sobotka has been the guy that's gone back and forth. In addition to the Martin injury, the Braves claim Robbie Erlen off waivers from Pittsburgh, and then he was activated. He's a 29-year-old, by the way, a left-hander. Not great numbers career wise, but actually a mid threes FIP, if you want to believe in that. Last year he got bagged up to death. But someone who's not like completely useless and might be an interesting bullpen arm. Any reaction to that other than the fact that Chris Martin, we hope you feel better.
Yeah, that's a freak injury. Whatever happened to Chris, I hope he's okay. And, hopefully he's back in another week or so. Robbie Erlen, I think there's a little bit to like there. He kind of has the Josh Tomlin mold, a guy who isn't necessarily going to strike you out, but he's also not going to walk you. The stuff isn't great, but he's going to pump strikes, and if you hit it, great, and if you don't, then he gets through innings. So we've talked ad nauseum for the last couple months about how important depth is this year, and he's a guy who's been around really for a while now. When I was looking him up, I didn't realize he's been around since 2013 and had a stint with the Padres and then the Pirates, as you mentioned. Again, nothing earth-shattering. I don't think he's going to necessarily be slotted in for starts anytime soon or in a key bullpen role, but doesn't have to take a chance. He's had a couple of nice years. His best year was probably 2018 when he made a 12 starts and 39 appearances altogether. So kick the tires for a waiver claim like that and see if there's something there.
Yeah, totally fine with me, and worth a shot to have someone outside the organization with a couple of options that are not, I would say, ideal already in the pool of players. So yeah, sign me up for that. If he's bad, you can just part ways and that'll be the end of that. The other news item on the pitching side is that Cole Hamels reportedly was throwing from about 100 feet away and is hoping for a bullpen session by early next week. Obviously, he is not eligible to return from the IL until September, or at least early September. But fingers crossed, I suppose. I'm sort of on record as expecting nothing from Cole Hamels at this point. I think you kind of have to, but there is a world in which he helps you in 3 or 4 weeks. And if he's on track, that's not a bad thing.
No, I don't think anybody's necessarily holding their breath. And again, know, realistically, if he is able to come back in any capacity in September, it will have been roughly 11 months since he's thrown a competitive pitch to major league hitters. So who knows, maybe if he is able to give the team anything in September, if they get to the playoffs in October. But again, I think with Hamels, you just kind of take it with a grain of salt. Hopefully he's able to give you something, but I would assume they're kind of moving forward as if they're not expecting a whole lot from him.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to, but maybe he'll surprise. And again, you know, that investment was a short one, so not the end of the world if you can't get anything from him. Obviously, it'd be helpful without Mike Soroka, and we will not talk about that again tonight. I'm sure we all agree that was brutal. But moving on from there, as they're trying to patch this thing together in the rotation. And by the way, had an opener essentially today, which yeah. We'll talk about later on. I know it's a doubleheader, but that might be the strategy moving forward. Last thing on the news side before we get into some game stuff and some takeaways, et cetera, it's more of a baseball-wide one. The Cardinals are still not playing baseball. The Cubs and Cardinals got postponed all weekend after some more positive tests from the Cardinals. As of Friday, it was 9 players and 7 staff, and it might even be expanding from there in the last day or so for the Cardinals. And they've already postponed their next series against Pittsburgh, which was supposed to start tomorrow on Monday. So when they come back, if they do come back in the next couple of days, they'll be out for about 2 weeks without playing, and they'll have 55 games remaining, essentially. The Cardinals have not played in a long time. So more than anything, it's just like another reminder that this is also perilous, but also baseball has acknowledged that some of these teams might not get to 60. Obviously, the Marlins are playing again. They're still, you know, way behind, but they at least have a path to get there. The Cardinals, I don't really see a realistic path for them to play 60 games this year. I know they're going to try to play some doubleheaders and stuff when they get going again, if they do get going again. But this is kind of just the reality that there'll be a team or two, it might even be more than that, that have way, way fewer games than 60. And the Cardinals seem to be the number one case for that right now.
I really don't know what Major League Baseball is going to do, because best case, if the Cardinals are able to play next weekend on Friday, they will have played 5 games. I mean, you think about this season, it's flying by, but you know, 5 games was the second game against the Tampa Bay Rays for the Braves, and everything that's happened since then. Imagine if they've been sitting on the couch since then, right?
Yeah, 5 games in like 3.5 weeks, I think, at that point in time.
Yeah. I mean, from a player perspective, I don't know how you keep your pitchers fresh. You can only stay so crisp when you're throwing bullpen sessions and live batting practice and all of that. And again, as you said, there's just mathematically, even if you try to work in a doubleheader into every series, and I don't see why other teams would want to go for that. It's not their problem that the Cardinals broke all the rules and are having to be on the sidelines for 2+ weeks. I don't know what baseball is going to do. Again, if they're in the playoff hunt, and again, they're a pretty solid team, I don't know what you do if they finish the year with 48 games and they're in contention with a team that's played 60. What do you do? I mean, do you go by win percentage? I would imagine the team that played 60 games might not love that. And again, it's a sticky situation, but for the Cardinals' sake, I hope they're able to, even if their full roster isn't, they're able to use some of their taxi squad, their player pool, maybe sign a couple of free agents like the Marlins have done, just to be able to field the team and see what happens. But yeah, pretty ugly all the way around.
Yeah, and hopefully baseball continues. Hopefully the Cardinals get this thing fixed out and sort of figured out, I should say. And yeah, lots of questions to be answered on the schedule. And I think even if they get all the way to the end here, you're going to see the Cardinals play less than 60 games. And just like figuring out what that means in the standings is a question. So we'll see what they do. And I know I, for one, trust Rob Manfred implicitly. So that'll be just great. Go ahead and figure that out, Rob.
Record. Yeah, impeccable record.
Godspeed to Rob. All right, let's get into the games. We're going to start with basically Thursday, since we did have a podcast Wednesday night with Eric and Grant. Thursday is a good jumping off point because it was the return of Markakis, who hit 5th in the lineup against a right-handed pitcher. And the more that was not surprising to me in any way. People were outraged. I was not. I think it's not that bad and also not surprising. So whatever. But the other thing that was actually noteworthy that continues, I think, to right now, is that Brian Snicker sort of pulled the trigger on removing Ender Inciarte from the lineup, evening us to righty. Now, I famously kind of went back and forth with Eric a week ago in kind of defending Ender. With that said, Ender was really bad again this week, and the clock is ticking. And I will acknowledge that, even as someone who was relatively pro-Ender on that podcast. Yeah, I'll just say that right now. He's been pretty bad. And with that said, after the game, Snicker said, and I quote, might just roll with this for a while, end quote. And that basically means Adam Duvall playing against right-handed pitching with Acuna in center field and Markakis in the corner outfield spot. As before we get into all of this, Ender's numbers are putrid. He has a sub 230 slugging right now. He has a 57 WRC plus, a sub 200 batting average. It's been quite bad. He did play today in the first game, although I am inclined to believe that's just because it was a doubleheader and they didn't want to have everybody sit and everybody play back-to-back games. But, you know, when Snicker says I'm going to roll with this lineup, I think I'm going to believe him. And while it might seem crazy, it's not that bad considering how bad Ender has been.
Yeah. And I think with Ender, again, we know how good the glove can be, and he hasn't been excellent. I think his defense, as he's starting to get a little bit older, has certainly taken a bit of a step back since the guy he was when the Braves first got him. And again, he was an otherworld defender in 2017 when he was a Gold Glover. And again,
right after I argued on his behalf last week, he came out and had a really bad week of defense for him, which was not ideal timing.
I mean, again, it's not, you know, games aren't pinned on one play, but I think he dropped what ended up being the go-ahead run for the Blue Jays in a game they lost earlier in the week. And again, you don't want to point blame on him for one play that most center fielders probably don't even make. But again, if the defense is not pristine, I don't know why you bother playing Ender, because he has been, I mean, truly lifeless at the plate. I mean, it looks like he's swinging a pool noodle right now. He's not driving balls. It's not a case of, well, he's hitting the ball hard. It's not one of those kind of Dansby Swanson slumps where he's just lining the ball all over the place and he's just having bad luck. There's nothing to like in Ender's batted ball profile. And again, because you have some other options in the outfield right now with Markakis back, Adam Duvall's having a great time, Ozuna, Acuna, I don't see how you play him right now. And I think I tweeted on Sunday afternoon, it's like, you got to get this guy off the field. Ender had a truly lifeless at bat in a key spot, and thankfully it didn't end up costing the Braves the game. But he looked like he was completely lost, and you just can't have that in a shortened season like this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I like the glove. It's valuable in center field, but when you do have Acuna that can play center field, that makes life easier. And just as a point of comparison here, we've all pointed to the fact that, you know, Adam Duvall has a platoon split. He definitely does. But Adam Duvall has a career 90 WRC plus against right-handed pitching, which is not good, but it's probably as good as Ender is right now, or better. So it's not a situation where you're giving up like a complete nothing. And Adam Duvall has been good against lefties, especially this year, which that's what he's there to do. But Adam Duvall, if you assume that Adam Duvall is going to be that guy, which is a, you know, below average, but not terrible hitter against righties, you can kind of take some safety in that versus what Ender is giving you. And you still have Ender if you need him. Obviously the Pache question is out there. That's been a talking point already quite a bit. I think if Pache wasn't banged up early, and maybe if there wasn't some contract considerations, all that stuff, you might see him at some point in the near future. But you know, even then, you still might be better off with Duvall. If Duvall's hitting, having Duvall, Markakis, and Acuna in the outfield is probably your best alignment right now. If we assume that Ender is just this guy now, I still want to believe that Ender might be able to find something, but I also totally understand not giving him a chance to do that now. You've probably seen enough. And in this short season, when Snicker says, and by the way, Snicker loves Ender and kind of always has. So if he's going to give up on you, that's kind of a sign that it might be time for Ender.
Huh. Yeah. And again, nothing says that you couldn't go back to him, but
yeah.
Whether you want to believe in the hot hand fallacy, if a guy's seeing the ball well, whether it's all just luck, whatever it is, clearly Adam Duvall, every time Adam Duvall plays, it feels like something good happens. And I think because you have that option, you have to roll with it. If you truly had no one else, you just hide Ender in that ninth spot, which you can do a little bit because of the DH. You don't worry
that,
about it.
That happened today.
Right.
In the early game.
If you have a pitcher out there, it's hard, because then you're really giving up two of your nine outs the way he's going. And there's some other holes in the lineup right now, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Again, you have a little more flexibility with the DH, and you can hide him there. But again, you have to get something out of him, especially if he's the guy batting in front of the top of the order, which is so good. And again, if Duvall's playing the way he is, and everybody else, Markakis has looked pretty good since returning, I don't see a way to really get him regular at bats right now.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, people reacted today when Ender started the first game as if maybe he was going to be back. And my first reaction was, I'm inclined to believing what Snicker said about rolling with Duvall and Markakis And because it was a doubleheader, it kind of gives you the cover to play under. And yeah, if you have a doubleheader, put him in there. Or if, you know, every once in a while, you might want to play him to keep him fresh. But I think the primary look now against lefties, of course, but against righties is probably going to be Duvall. And that's okay with me, even though I would have told you differently a couple weeks ago. I'm all right with it now, given what Ender looks like.
I mean, I sit on opening day after Ender, I think in one inning, tracked down two balls in the opposite gaps. And I said, you know, it's going to be hard to take Ender out of this lineup because the defense has been really, really good. Well, 2 weeks later, surprise, here we are saying it's hard to really find ways to get him in there regularly.
Yeah, it's interesting to be sure. As for Markakis, by the way, he had the walk-off home run on the first pitch on Thursday evening against a right-handed pitcher, and surprise, that's what he does well. People were like trying to dunk on us for some reason about that, and I was like, wait, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, especially lately, I couldn't have been more on the record about how he helps you against right-handed pitching, and that's what happened in that spot. Like, he's good at that. But that was cool. It was good to see him get that knock early on. He is 3-for-13 with a walk so far, so not lighting the world on fire, but he's been fine. About a league average bat so far. That's what you want out of Markakis. And it was a fun moment to be sure. And the notion that we're all rooting against him is funny, because that's just not the case.
Foolish. Yeah.
We want him to do well, even if it makes us look silly sometimes. I'm totally fine with that. But that's my only reaction to that was like, yeah, good. When he hits right-handed pitching, that's what you want him in there for. That's what his strength is. And he did it. So cool.
Yep. No, I mean, again, against righties, it makes all the sense in the world. He puts up a good at bat. Showed some power, which was good, and the pitch he hit out was not a bad pitch by any means.
No, that was a nice swing.
Yep, went down and got it, and he crushed it. I do want to say his celebration. He kind of did some little, like, I don't even know, jazz hands.
That was hysterical. I love that.
Yeah, all the guys were jumping up and down around the around home plate, and it was a lot of fun. So that was a good way to kind of wrap up what was a very, very good night from Tukey. And he didn't get Tukey the win, but to wrap it up there and not go to extra innings where things have gotten weird this year was really good.
Yeah, and we should talk about Tukey for a second. Obviously, he had 9 strikeouts, 6 2/3. I was kind of stunned that he left him in as long as he did in the 7th. As a point of reference there, it didn't bite them too badly. But Tukey was good, man. And obviously, I was talking on Twitter even to old friend of the program, Carlos Collazo. Tukey was my original prospect love. He was my guy. Like, not quite to the level of Eric and Soroka, but Tukey was always the guy that I would highlight as my guy. It's faded a little bit, but the fact that he still has that repertoire, he just looked fantastic. If you didn't know he had been struggling for a while, you would have thought that was the prospect that we all kind of thought might happen. And again, it's one game, but it was really, really fun to see him look like that and give you some optimism, because obviously the Braves need all the help they can get right now in the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, when he has his pitches working, when he's pumping the fastball and hitting a spot, and we all know how good the curve is, and the splitter is really, really effective against lefties. That's been the thing for him so far. He's been almost unhittable for righties, but lefties have really hit him hard, and he's had some control issues with them. Tukey's always kind of been a tease, because the last 2 years we've seen him just with filthy stuff, which has hitters shaking their heads because they have no idea what to do. And then there's nights where he either isn't finding the zone or nothing is moving and he's getting pounded. So a really good sign. As we know, the rotation is going to need some young guys to step up, whether it's Tukey, whether it's Kyle Wright, a few others, but we'll talk about the opener they used today. it was an awesome performance, as locked in as he has ever been, and hopefully he's able to continue it moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good place to end on that, because there was the rain out on Friday. So we'll pause here for a break to hear from the old sponsors. We'll be right back with stuff from Saturday, Sunday, and beyond.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special 3-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Scott, let's talk about Saturday, the least favorite night/game of the weekend. They were not supposed to win necessarily. It was like one of those toss-up games in Las Vegas with Wright against Jerick Arrieta. Wright had a good day other than a 4-batter stretch in the 4th inning. He gave up a home run, followed by 2 more base runners and another home run. So you can't say it was a good day because he still gave up four runs, but there was a lot to like about Wright, and there's also a lot to not like about that little stretch. I thought it was a good bounce back from him to get through the fifth and the sixth without any further damage. That's a good sign. They didn't just implode as a young guy there. But what do you make of what you saw there? And obviously he gets another chance in the rotation because he's just going to be around until he's not. But I liked what I saw for the most part.
Yeah, me too. He's so close. You watch him pitch. The stuff is good. The breaking balls move well. He generally locates his fastball pretty well. Every now and then he'll be a little inconsistent and it'll fly off against left-handed hitters. But I'm with you. I think because of the week we had with losing Mike Soroka and in the rotation being what it is, I think this was a normal year and Wright goes six innings and gives up four runs. And as you said, was really pretty good every other batter except for that quick little stretch. It went from 0 to 100 really fast for him. But again, I think he shows you that clearly he has the stuff to get big leaguers out. You hope that he's able to be a little more consistent because so far the theme, and he's only made a handful of starts, but in Tampa Bay he was good, and then he had one inning that got away from him, wasn't able to work through it. I think we're finding that as he continues to get reps at the big league level and hopefully he's able to get out of those jams, he's only going to get better. I think at this point you have to continue giving him every chance because he gives you a chance to win whenever he takes the mound. And I think the upside there to be a middle of a rotation guy is there. It's just going to be a matter of him learning how to navigate big league lineups a second and third time.
Yep. And, young guys, you have that fear always that you like them the first time through and then maybe they get shelled the second time through. Again, that's why I was encouraged that he managed to bounce back after the hiccup in the fourth. But we'll see more of him, obviously. And honestly, even if he was fantastic on Saturday, they would have lost because they didn't score. The Braves had five base runners in nine innings on Saturday. And all four hits on the night were singles, including two from Hetcheverria in the ninth spot. So the offense just had nothing that night. So that's a good thing, I think. Just the fact that, if they had lost that game, I don't know, 8-7 because Wright blew up, it would have kind of felt more dismal. But even if Wright had been great, they would have lost. So it's okay. Yeah. Those nights happen. And I think I was overall encouraged by what we saw, despite the offense, because Sunday was more fun.
Much better. Yeah, Saturday night was frustrating to be sure. It was one of those games I was kind of following along but stopped watching because I think it's just one of those nights for your mental health. You can tune out a little bit. And it was, for the best.
Yeah, and we mentioned the doubleheader alignment in game one on Sunday. And by the way, the first ever 7-8 doubleheader the Braves have been in. So that was a landmark occasion today. In the opener, they went with Ozuna in the outfield, and then Marquez was DHing, and Ender was back in the lineup, as we talked about before. Seemingly, you probably just didn't want Marquez playing the field for two games in a row at age 36. I totally understand all of that. And I'm going to try to pronounce his name right now. It's Waskar Enoa. That's what I'm going with. That's what the pronunciation guide says. I went an entire deep dive, by the way, along with Chris Willis of Talking Chop fame on the pronunciation. So I'm going with that. Hopefully that's right. But anyway, he gets to start as the opener in effect. It was his third major league appearance overall. Got through 2 1/3 innings. Did leave two runners on, and one of them scored to go down 1-0. But not too bad, I will say. And then from there, it was pretty much just the offense exploding for two straight games.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it was impressive for a guy who probably didn't have a real great idea of what he was doing this week until a couple days ago. I think with Enoa, you've seen the stuff is good. It plays up. I think ultimately his big league role is probably that of a middle reliever or kind of one of these hybrid guys who have really gained some traction recent years, Tampa Bay, Milwaukee, wherever it may be. And again, in a season like this, if he's a guy who has the stuff to be an opener, get a lineup one time through, probably not going to leave him out there much longer, at least shouldn't leave him out there too much longer. But for a game when the Braves knew they were going to be a little weird in this shortened doubleheader, he did a commendable job given the circumstances.
Yeah, that's all he needed, honestly, was to just get something out of that spot, not get killed. And the rest of the day was just offense, offense, offense. Ronald Acuna had himself a day on Sunday. First, he bombed in the fifth of the opening game. And by the way, after a ridiculous bunt attempt by Ender that was rightly ridiculed on Twitter. I want to forget that one right now. I just want to make sure we pointed that out. It was just not fun. But Ronnie bombs to go up 2-1, and then moments later, Adam Duvall, there's that man again with a three-run double to take a 5-1 lead, and it was smooth sailing from there. The only other note that I wanted to make from the first game was that Will Smith pitched again for the first time. He threw 7 pitches, which is kind of funny. But then from there, it was Tomlin and Melanson, and they finished it off pretty quietly. I have no takeaways from the first game other than that. Like, it was just kind of a breezy win once they put up that five spot, and that's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, for as bad as the offense looked on Friday night and as bad as the offense was in the first couple innings of Saturday's game, or Sunday's first game, rather, it felt like once Acuña hit that home run, the gorilla got off everybody's back a little bit. Guys were pressing. They were missing, made a note. I mean, I swear that they were just missing fastballs right down the middle of the pipe and just not hitting them. At some point, you knew the offense was going to break through. And as you said, Adam Duvall, once again, whenever he's in there, it seems like good things happen. And I do want to give a shout out to Josh Tomlin, who has been awesome this year. He was a guy who maybe a month ago we weren't even sure was going to make the roster. Again, of course, some things changed, but for a guy who was good in his role last year as kind of an innings and garbage time eater, Tomlin has been awesome. He worked effectively the 8th inning in today's game, which was the 6th. And again, he is who he is. He's not necessarily going to strike people out. He did walk someone today, was a little bit of a surprise, but he's going to throw strikes and see if you hit it. And so far, he's been really, really big this year.
Yeah, by the way, Tomlin is striking out people this year, which is bizarre. He never does that. But in 9 innings, he has 12 strikeouts. That's like very strange for him. He doesn't really do that. Has one walk. But again, 9 innings, 2 hits, 1 walk, 12 Ks, and no runs. Yeah, I mean, not sustainable at all, but really, really good for Josh Tomlin. So shouts to him. We are, I would say, supportive of the Josh Tomlin experience. So
You
go on that. Game 2 was much more breezy. We'll go offense first. As I mentioned before, Acuña had a great day. He hit 2 more home runs, so 3 on the day. In back-to-back innings, it was 5th and the 6th. He had 2 home runs. He was unconscious today. And also, Freddie Freeman, who's been up and down, I would say, charitably so far this year, went 6-for-8 today with a home run, a triple, and 2 doubles. So the best 2 players on the team went kind of ballistic today. And they would have won probably either game without them going ballistic, but it made it a lot easier for them to go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was clear that Ronald is on a tear right now. He's a guy who's always been streaky. He's somebody who started slowly too last year and then picked it up. And again, whenever you saw, I mean, the ball just sounds so different coming off his bat. And those 2 opposite field homers today in game 2 were,
I mean, his swing.
Yeah, it's unreal. I mean, I almost wonder, I mean, of course, he famously in the home run derby kept going opposite field and everyone's like, what the hell is this guy doing? I really think he has more pure power to the opposite field, which is just uncanny for a guy like that. But the way his swing, as violent as his swing is, again, he's despite the quote unquote slow start, he's now up to a 154 WRC plus on the year.
That'll
which is
play.
Pretty good for a 22-year-old. And then Freddie, again, as you said, he had that great game about a week ago. I think he had 4 hits in a game. And then again, today, the 6 hits, he's up to a 158 WRC plus. So again, it's just kind of a reminder of how early we still are. And again, it's weird that after, what is this, 15, 16 games, we're like a third of the way done with the season, a fourth of the way done. But again, good players are going to find their stride. And it was nice to see those 2 guys kind of pick things up a little bit today.
For sure, and they were great. We should mention the pitching, and that was led by Max Fried, the team's 1 and potentially only starter. 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks for Fried. He was very good and cruising and no trouble really at all in this game. Not really much else to say about that. Obviously, the pressure is on him in a big way, and he's been responding to it so far by being awesome. I don't want to put too much on him, but obviously the Braves are going nowhere if he's not incredible, basically, the rest of the way. So he's got to be, and he's been so far.
He has. I want to give him a shout out for – he had a huge situation with Bryce Harper in the bases loaded.
Oh, yeah.
And he got Bryce to pop up, and it was a good pitch. He went down 2-0 to Bryce with the bases loaded. And I
actually wonder if they were thinking about going to the bullpen in that spot at some point. Because there was a discussion I know on Twitter with people that I think are smart about maybe you go to Minter in that spot, because Fried was not looking his best in that moment. And obviously Harper is Harper, but they stayed where they want. They stayed where they needed to go, and he got it done.
Yeah. My one thought with that was, because you have a doubleheader and you have another game tomorrow, it seemed like, I don't think Shane Green ever warmed up today. He might have been a guy who was kind of off limits, if you will, because you do have a baseball game in 24 hours you have to handle. But again, Max was fantastic, has been really one of the best pitchers in baseball, not just obviously, as you said, for the Braves, he's going to be kind of unfairly the go-to guy because of the injuries and everything. But again, for him to continue taking a step forward as really one of the game's better young lefty pitchers is really encouraging.
Yeah, so far, Max Fried, 4 starts, 22 and two-thirds innings, 4 earned runs, 6 walks, 21 strikeouts, ERA of 1.59. So, lights out, and that's what they need, and obviously he's been doing it so far. Okay, that'll do it for the games. Obviously, I guess we'll just reset now. The Braves are 11-6. They are on a 105 win pace, which is not sustainable, I don't think. But, you know, that is what it is. As of this moment in time, Scott, 538 projects the Braves to finish with a 34-26 record. That may not sound incredible, but that's an 89% chance to win to make the playoffs, and a better than 50% chance to win the division. So you're in a great spot. Obviously, the standings look bizarre in the National League East because of the games that are not being played by the Marlins and the Phillies. But the Braves are in great shape at 11-6.
Yep. 11-6. They're 11-4 in games when I don't have to face Jacob DeGrom for my money, the best pitcher on the planet. Again, I know that everybody is probably a little better if they took away their starts against the best pitchers in baseball. But yeah, I mean, circle back, this team, considering everything that's going on, it's really pretty damn impressive that they're 11-6. They've played a pretty tough schedule so far. It's not like they're beating up on the bad teams in the AL and NL Central or anything like that. So, again, it's going to be a grind all year long because the schedule is so difficult. But as we've talked, now that they're up to 11-6, you would think that, you mentioned the playoff percentage, if they can just hold serve, and even if they're 500 the rest of the way,
I think
that'll get them in. Yeah, that gets them in the dance. And then, again, this year's so funky, I don't think anyone's going to put too much stock in playoffs just given the circumstances, but they've been really good so far.
It's still nice to make it, and obviously that's really the only goal. I mean, I think winning the division, of course, is what everybody wants to do, but in this weird season, I think just making the division would be more than enough. Making the playoffs would be more than enough, especially given the pitching situation, etc. But to your point, I think 500, they would cruise to the playoffs. They can go below easily 500 at this point and make the playoffs the rest of the way. So that's obviously a long way away. We're hoping anyway that the full season gets played, but they're in obviously great shape here. Wanted to sort of set the stage there. Last thing before we look ahead to the schedule for next week and beyond is people were talking about this a lot. I know you brought it up in our background discussions. Let's talk about third base for a second, because third base, obviously there's been a lot of attention on the outfield. There's been a lot of attention on other things, obviously starting pitching. Third base, Austin Riley and Yoan Camargo have been a discussion point, but because of the roster situation early in this restarted season or starting late season, however you want to put that, we kind of knew that both guys were going to play quite a bit, so there wasn't as much of a discussion point about what that was going to look like. And even now with Ozzy Albies on the shelf, you've seen Camargo at second base, you've seen Riley in the outfield. Like, there's been places to put these guys, but at third base this year, it's not going very well. Obviously, the Braves have managed to win a lot of games without these guys doing much. But overall, third base has been a mess, and I wanted to tee you up to talk about it.
Mm. Yeah, and you nailed it with, if the team was 4 games under 500, I think it might be a different conversation. So clearly, they want to get the most out of third base as they can, but things are still going well. I think it's a fascinating situation. I think you do too, because after today's game, they are 27th in baseball in third base WAR. They are at -0.1 WAR for the year. And again, you're only talking about 2.5 weeks worth of games, but that is pretty bad. Combined, they are hitting .158, .235, .316 with a 54 WRC plus. They're striking out in a third of their plate appearances. I will say the defense has been really good from both guys, from Riley and Camargo. But when you're talking about a shortened season where every game matters a little bit more, that is really, really bad. And frankly, they need more from those two players.
Yeah, that's well said, I would say. I mean, I don't know. I'm obviously kind of a Riley skeptic overall when compared to the baseline of Braves fans. I think he's a good prospect. I've always thought that. But at the same time, I think he's never been like this guy can't miss guy. I think there's a lot of uncertainty, let's just say, with Riley. I think the power is obviously real, but when he came in and mashed early last year, I had my guard up, and that proved to be right, I think, eventually. I think, you know, in a vacuum, it'd be a good time to play him a lot because the season's so weird, etc. But I don't know. I think Snicker is going to play Camargo more if Riley struggles. I think ultimately Snicker's going to sort of defer to the more veteran guy. I know Camargo's not like a really a veteran, but he's been around for a longer time. His defense is probably a little bit better. Although Riley is okay. It's not like he's bad defensively, but I don't know, man. It's just really weird, and I don't really have a solution. I think obviously using Camargo at second base right now some is a good idea with Ozzy out. But eventually you would, obviously we're hoping that Ozzy's back in. And do you want to platoon them? I don't even, that doesn't really work that well either, considering what Camargo's strengths are versus Riley's. I'm not sure what the answer is. I think I would just defer to just like playing Riley every day to see what you have. At least that might put you in a situation where you can make a decision for the long term, because short term matters more right now. But long term, you know, the plan has been Austin Riley at third base long term. But if he's not the guy, they need to figure that out as soon as they can. I'm not saying you give up on him this year if he's bad, but you know, eventually you have to start looking around if he's not going to be your guy in capital letters long term. So I would lean there, but I mean, I don't have a good answer. People always ask us like what we think about third base, and I really don't know. I think I lean to just playing Riley until you can't play Riley anymore, but I'm not like married to that either.
Yeah, well, it brings a fascinating decision for the Braves, because I think looking forward, as you said, kind of the long-term outlook, you need to know what you have with Riley, because in the best case scenario, Riley is, even if he's not a star, but he is a serviceable, passable third baseman, solid defense, going to hit, you know, 25, 30 homers, not too much else, but he's a playable everyday or mostly everyday guy. You would happily take that given the other talent on the roster. But so far, other than 2.5 crazy weeks last year when they were effectively hitting golf balls, you know, when everybody and their brother had 30 homers, he's been really, really bad, unplayable. And he continues to play because it makes sense. If this was the 2015 Braves, who were 3-4 years away, you play Riley every single day, no question, because what do you have to lose, right? You know, you're 15 games out of first place. You're not trying to win a division. You're not trying to win a World Series.
Totally agree.
But in this shortened year, you're trying to win every game. Clearly, even if you don't think a World Series is likely, and I think that went down dramatically without Soroka, you're still trying to win a division. You're still trying to make a run. I think Camargo gives you a better player every day right now, or at least most days, depending on who the pitcher is. But you have to know going into 2021 and beyond what your third base situation is. And if Riley's sitting the bench, and it's, I think it's fairly clear the Braves don't love Johan Camargo, nor do you or I or most folks, you're never going to know unless you give Riley regular at bats. But of course, that means that you're effectively getting, at least so far, outside of a couple of hanging breaking balls that he's gotten a hold of, next to nothing offensively.
I mean, that's part of the thing, is that we know what Riley can do when there's a pitch on the tee for him. The power is obviously real. Everyone knows that. But at the same time, the guy has a 44 WRC plus this year. He's striking out 37% of the time. He is walking a decent amount, but it's, and I want to be cautious and say it's a very small sample size. I know they've played several games, but Austin Riley has 43 plate appearances this year. So it's not like this is a situation where you just like strike him off because of this season. Like it's too early. And I'm just saying,
absolutely,
from the point of someone I think has been a skeptic to this point in time compared to most people, I should say, not everybody. I've been a little lower on him. I'm not telling you he's bad now. I'm just saying the signs are not great. He is young. He's 23. It's not like this is like over the hill, but there's some decisions to be made here. Again, I think I would still just play him because Camargo, like to your point, I've also been a little bit more skeptical of Camargo than people were. I think people have started to come around to our side on this one now that we've seen him basically be unplayably bad for 2 years. And again, Camargo has been better than Riley this year by a small amount, but it's still not good at the plate. And last year he was really bad at the plate. So I don't know. There's no good option. I think I wish beyond hope that they were actually like a natural platoon together, but they're not. Because of where Camargo's splits historically are. So there isn't an easy solution, which is unfortunate.
No, there's not. And again, I mean, the team is clearly doing okay with minimal production.
It hasn't mattered
for them. And, but again, there's a long term and a short term with everything, and these two things kind of conflict, right? I think in a best case scenario, Riley would emerge, and again, like you said, guy has 40 plate appearances. it's not like he's has 2 years worth of chances here. And we're like, you know what? I just don't think it's going to happen for Austin Riley, everyday third baseman.
I mean, even with that said, like, as much as he played, as much as he felt like he played last year, the guy in his career right now has like 340 plate appearances, which is like a half season of full-time baseball. And by the way, he's still slugging 455 in his major league career. It's just that everything else has been terrible. Like, he still has 20 home runs in 340 plate appearances, which is a lot. Like, he might be one of those guys that you need to just play every day and hope he runs into 30 home runs and does like nothing else for you. You know what I mean? I'm trying to think of an example right now of someone that's like that about Major League Baseball where, I mean, maybe it's like what Adam Duvall was in Cincinnati. Like when Adam Duvall like made that All-Star team because he just mashed a bunch of home runs that one year. And Duvall's better than that overall. Like we are Duvall fans on this podcast, but maybe it's just a guy who, if he plays every day for a full season, he'll hit you 30, 35 home runs, but nothing else would be great. And the Braves would take that, I think. But the problem is right now, even with 20 home runs in his major league career and maybe a little bit more than a half season of play, he has an 81 WRC plus in his career.
That's not gonna work.
Yeah. It's just not. Yeah. I mean, even with the power, that's not enough, man. It can't only be that. There's a certain baseline level of stuff that you have to be able to do beyond. And again, his defense is not that bad. Like, he's a big athletic dude that moves well. Like, I think I was probably too low on his defense at times. I kind of trust him defensively. He's not going to be incredible, but he's fine. But you just got to get on base, man. Like, I'm not even sure what else to say about it other than you just got to get on base.
No, I mean, you're right. The defense has improved. And again, he's 23 years old. He's going to spend the entire year at 23. It's not like he's 28. But yeah, I mean, you talked about guys who kind of remind you of Adam Duvall in Cincinnati. Miguel Sano is somebody who's kind of, and even if he isn't quite as good as Miguel Sano, but looking at Miguel Sano, he strikes out in a third of his plate appearances, but he has a career 500 slugging percentage. If that's who Austin Riley can be, yeah, he's going to strike out, but he's going to run into 25 homers and play passable defense. I think the Braves take that. You throw him in the sixth or seventh spot in your order. You can live with that. But so far, again, other than the two or three just insane weeks where he went scorched earth last year, he's pretty much been the same guy of minimal contact. It's not even hard contact. It's just no contact. And it's just you hope there's another gear. Again, I think playing him is only going to tell you a little bit more about who he can be. But as you said, there's really no perfect solution for this right now.
Yep. So I know that might have been an interesting detour for some, but I wanted to make sure we talked about it after you brought it up. And it hasn't mattered. That's the bright side, is that the Braves have been this good without those guys doing really anything. And so that's not a problem. And by the way, catcher's been good, which I want to point out. We'll talk about that later. But catcher, as usual, the Braves just somehow every year figure out catcher, and it always, for some reason, works. Okay. We'll save that for a future episode. Last thing. This week coming up, the final game in the series against Philly on Monday, and then two in New York against the Yankees. But as you graciously pointed out to me, no Gerrit Cole or James Paxton. That's a win for the Braves. Obviously, they can still lose those games. The Yankees are really good. And by the way, the headliner of the week for me, the first off day of the season. Obviously, the Braves were off on Friday because they got rained out, but they weren't supposed to. They were not actually off. They were at the ballpark. No game, no scheduled game on Thursday after 20 straight. So there's that. And then Miami after that. By the way, I would not want to go to Miami right now, but there you go.
Yeah. The first place Miami Marlins are now tied. The standings are so weird, as you said.
I'm pulling them up right now. I'm pretty sure the Marlins still had the win percentage lead over the Braves coming into. No, they're. They still do. So hilariously, the Braves are 11-6, right? The Braves have a half game lead in the games column, but they actually have a worse percentage than the Marlins, because the Marlins are 7-3. So the Marlins have played seven fewer games than the Braves. So I'm not sure what happens. Like, if the season ends today, do the Braves lose the division because the Marlins have a better winning percentage, even though the Braves are ahead in the games column? I don't know how that works, but the showdown of the NL East this weekend between the Marlins and the Braves.
The Marlins are, I was perplexed. I was tweeting, and I forget who originally made the point, but I'm kind of surprised that there's been this nationwide from at least National Baseball Writers celebration of this Marlins hot start. I mean, they're 7-3, but four of those.
They have stars and aces. Just ask John Heyman. They have stars. They have aces.
Miguel Rojas. Leaders. Yeah. But again, obviously they have four against Baltimore. They won two out of three against the Phillies on opening week, which feels like forever ago, even though it was just, 17 days ago. They're going to come back to earth a little bit. As you said, it's a chance for the Braves to see a team that is technically in first place right now. And again, it's huge to miss in a shortened season like this. The difference between seeing Gerrit Cole and not seeing Gerrit Cole is big. Huge. They might also miss Tanaka, depending on what the Yankees do. They have a day off on Monday. The difference, if things get down to it at the end of the year, the difference between your pitching matchup could be the difference between a seed in the playoffs. It could be the difference between first and second place in the division. So nice break there, to be sure.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that more. We're on this incredible run of having midweek podcasts on accident. Unfortunately, a lot of them have been negative this week, especially with Soroka and the reaction to that. But we will have at least one podcast this week. I'm not sure if it's going to be in the middle of the week or in our normal Sunday slot, but we'll be here. Again, if you missed anything from this week, we had three shows in a four-day period between me and Eric, then me, very short, and then Grant and Eric, and now you and I today, a week later. So our fourth show in 8 days, we're on fire with the podcast. But please subscribe. Please, please, please subscribe. We've had a really encouraging buy-in from listeners and fans. I really appreciate all of that. In fact, we are near the top, if not the top, in terms of monthly in our history of the podcast. So that's been fun. Definitely love to see that. But please go ahead and subscribe. Leave 5-star feedback, etc. Follow Scott if you'd like to. Scott, you are at Scott:55. Is that correct?
That is the one. Yes.
Follow this man for angry Arizona tweets occasionally. And then baseball that people hate you for.
Yeah, St. Louis Blues hockey playoffs. Here we go.
Oh yeah, hockey playoffs are here. That means you'll be insufferable, and I have to remember to mute you like nightly.
Yep. Mute friends, everyone's best friend. Yep.
It's like when I tweeted about Michigan football on Saturdays. It's very similar to that. No one cares. I'm just yelling into the void.
I have to admit, I think I muted the Atlanta Hawks just across the board, like the muted words.
Oh, that's fine. That's the right thing.
Yeah. Hey.
Well, listen, I mean, that's the thing with following, we're in the rabbit hole, but that's fine. That's the thing with following people that all like or follow or cover the Braves, is that you get all of their other teams. Like, Scott's are interesting because Scott does not live in Atlanta, but I would say most, maybe not most, a lot of Braves fans are Falcons fans and Hawks fans and Georgia fans and whatever else. Then you get some Panthers fans in there in the NFL. I know shots to a couple of Panthers fans that I know of. And then you get the other crossovers. You get Arkansas and Auburn and Clemson and everywhere else. I don't know. It's quite a smattering in Braves country. The Braves are a national fan base, Scott. Breaking news.
They are. I mean, again, like I've said before, growing up, I grew up in the Midwest in Missouri. It was easier to watch a Braves game on TV every night than it was to watch a Kansas City Royals game. And they were an hour and a half away from our house. So,
well, I mean, it's interesting. I can't remember who it was now. There was a really, really, really bad idea on like a shortened baseball season where they took like only weird markets. This is like a week ago now. I can't remember who it was. It was an NFL writer, and his reported objective was to take the big markets in baseball, but he included the Astros and he included the teams with big fan bases.
It was a Patriots beat writer.
Yeah. But like it was like
San Francisco Giants.
He picked like this really, really like ridiculous 8-team field and with no criteria. And I was like, okay, well, surely he'll explain himself. Somebody asked him and he was like, oh, I took the teams with the big fan bases. I was like, wait, you didn't include the Braves in a nationwide thing of the biggest fan bases? Yep. Like, I think you've lost your mind, my friend. Like, aside from maybe the Yankees and the Red Sox, I think maybe the Cardinals, I think the Braves would be third or fourth in terms of volume of fans nationwide. So I think you've lost your mind.
A lot too,
they do, but like they're all concentrated in like I guess because of Brooklyn, the Dodgers are high on the list. But if you think there are more Astros fans than Braves fans in the world, you are out of your ever-loving mind. I'll tell you that now.
After 3 good years, all of a sudden.
The Astros famously had like 0.0 TV ratings when they were so bad. Remember, before they got good, there were stories about how few people watched their baseball games on TV. Mm-hmm. The Braves could be the worst team in the world, and they're going to rate on TV because people watch the Braves. That's what happens. Yep. Anyway, that's one heck of a rabbit hole we're in the podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, we watched the second half of the 2015 season. We know how bad things can get, and we still tune in.
Yeah, we absolutely watched all of that, which is unfortunate. All right, Scott. Follow Scott. Follow the site. Check out all of our written content. Follow Eric. Follow Grant McCullough, who was gracious enough to join us this week. And we'll be back again. I'm not exactly sure when, but in the next few days. So stay tuned for all of that.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.